Hello and welcome back to another week of the DP World Tour Picks and Bets show. I say another week, Tom. We spent about 3 weeks off in between. Only two things have happened in the golf world since then. Scotty Scheffler has won every event. Nelly Korda's won every other event. So what have you been up to during the break?
Losing, apparently, because I didn't bet on Scotty Scheffler or Nelly Korda. Look, it's great. It's great for the game of golf, right? Like, it's great to have golfers playing in that way. Like, if Tiger Woods does it, we laud it. And that's what we should do right now, right? That's, you know, as much as we are upset that, you know, I mean, there'll be plenty of people out there that would have bet Scotty, right? When he was 10-1 in early March, it was worth doing. When he was 4-1, you start to question it, right? I mean, it's a difficult thing to do. I guess quick sort of recap on the Masters, guys. Good to always talk with someone else about it. It just felt like it was going to be the best Masters ever on the eighth hole. And then all of a sudden, about 43 seconds later, it was the most uneventful Masters ever. He just can't be beat right now. He's just so hard to beat. The only thing that's going to beat him is him taking some time off. And I'm not even sure that he'll come back and struggle for any reason. Like, I think he'll just come straight back to it and do well, right? So do I think, you know, there's already the Grand Slam odds are all out there and things like that? I don't think that's going to happen all of a sudden in 1 year, but it's hard to look past him right now.
It's crazy. It definitely was. I mean, so I guess humble brag and very fortunate. I did get to go to Sunday at the Masters this past year, you know, an absolute bucket list day it was.
Did you know that, buddy. By the way, was that like a last minute kind of thing that happened?
It was about 2 weeks prior. Got the ticket. So my friend Jonah, Jonah Schiffman, J Schiffy DFS. We've only known each other through Twitter and working on content sites together in the past and then collaborating on a bunch of stuff. And he's pretty high volume at DraftKings. So Onyx Reward was getting to go two tickets to Sunday at Augusta. It was him and his brother. Last minute, I guess 2 weeks prior, they reached out, hey, we have two extra tickets. So that's when myself, and then he actually invited another one of our friends who we worked together with, John Kelly, DFS. Those guys were MMA, like big UFC guys that they worked together, but they had never met in person either. So all three of us got to meet in Augusta, Georgia for the first time, spend a bucket list Sunday together. And yeah, we were sitting there waiting on 15 and 16. We had kind of perched up to see them go into the par five and then par three. So we saw everyone go through prior. And then by the time we just saw the scoreboards update, it was like, man, like, unless Ludwig eagles 13, like, it can't be. So we snuck over to Amen Corner to see that. And Scotty ho-hum, birdie, you know, birdie 14. And then we just, we'll meet you at 18. So it was super nice to be able to do that. And I mean, who knows if I'm ever going to get to do that again. But to have that Sunday was for the books.
I mean, you can't use phones, right, during tournament rounds. So you can't really lead or watch. You can't bet. Obviously, you can't bet in Georgia anyway, right? So how much does that infringe your sort of experience? Like, I'm assuming, like, you just enjoy it. Like, you just enjoy it because you're there for the first time. I guess eventually, like, if you've been there 2, 3, 4, 5 times, at some point, the other factors might become more important to you, I guess.
So it was crazy because, I mean, like, we had good action in DFS. I mean, knowing my bets were pretty much dead. I mean, I think I needed Fitz to make a run to top five. You know, like, that was like the sole betting at the time. But DFS, we played week long and then showdown. So we would go only on hole one, I at the front entrance, is there the like scoring for everybody, or else it's just the 10 people in the top 10. And sometimes, I mean, you see the group cycle through, so you'll know. And then some random leaderboards would have the round of the day. So like, we knew Tom Kim was taking it deep on Sunday, but we would go and like, we like kind of knew who we rostered, but like not all that well. And so like, you'd be like, who shot in the 60s today? Okay. Does anybody have Tom Kim? No one knows that they have Tom Kim. Likely not, because he's down the leaderboard, right? Okay. I think Jonah played a bunch of maybe Keegan or whoever it was on Sunday that played really well. And like, so we knew there was rooting interest. And then you get back to the car afterwards and all check your phones, and no one won anything too bad. No one lost anything too bad. But yeah, so I'd say like, you are just locked into the moment. Like, it is, it's so tame and controlled. I've been to the Waste Management, which is like obviously polar opposite.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, you don't know what time it is. Like we got there and we're walking. The fried egg recommendation was to walk 18 backwards. So like go from 18 to 1. So try to do that early on. I actually ran into Brendan and Andy like early on when doing that. So it was kind of cool to see them and told them what we were doing. But we get to the first tee and literally no idea what time it is. And I see somebody in Ohio State gear. It's like, man, that must be Shipley's group. Oh shit. Tiger's about to tee off, you know? And so then within like 20 seconds, there's Tiger, boom, walking right by. So it was like, just like, you're just in space, just like, just roaming around. And next thing you know, he gets an iron shot, like not far across the fairway from us. You pop across, like, to do it for your first time, like I would do things differently, I think, the next time, but I wouldn't have changed anything that we did.
I think it's so hard. Like everyone sort of I've been to multiple Open Championships and it's very dependent on the course. Like St. Andrews is just horrendous to get around. Like you get locked in loads of places. It's so busy. It's not a very good viewing course. Troon was probably one of my favorites. And it just happened to be that, you know, it was the Mickelson-Stenson year where it was so exciting. Hoylake was good in 2014 as well. And then we sort of went to the Morikawa one at St. George's, which is local to me. Like no shade, boiling hot, holes and miles away. Like there's so many different factors that make watching live golf difficult. So I always wonder whether like Augusta, obviously being Augusta makes up for it, but like what the viewing experience was like. So it's good to hear that you can see quite a good amount. And I guess
I was shocked by how much we could see.
Yeah.
I mean, we got access to 15, 16 pretty easily. And that was one of the best spots you could be at. Watch all the leaders through four without any weights. I mean, the hills make it so nice because you can see, you know, from a good distance, pretty much, you know, multiple holes in a lot of angles. So I think the only thing that's harder to get to is Amen Corner. And yeah, that's probably the best part of the property. The chairs, though, if I'm taking one recommendation for anybody, is chairs rule the place. And like, that's not light at all. If you put your chair down, it is your spot for the entire day. And you can bring in upwards of four chairs. Now, I didn't see anybody like stockpiling as they went in, but like what would happen is you'd show up. We were on 14 as the leaders went through right behind the tee box. People would get there 5 minutes before Scheffler got there and say, "Hey, I have a chair up there." And they would mosey their way to the second row in their chair. And they hadn't been there the whole day, you know? Like most spots, you got to be living there all day long. You could just weasel your way to your chair. So I would 7 a.m. gates open, throw two different chairs down in awesome spots and circle back there when it matters.
It's funny, isn't it? When courses keep those kind of traditions, I think it's like, isn't it like Torrey Pines where you can literally just put a golf bag in a queue, like on the day of and queue up for around it, the South course, right? Like it's on the North course maybe, but like, it's amazing how you can, how things work and how traditional things are. I mean, I don't know how happy I'd feel about trying to scurry around to see golf when someone says, "I've got a chair and it's been there for 8 hours and I haven't sat in it. Now I'm going to sit there." Like, I think I'd be pretty peeved, but by the same token, like, it's not their fault, it's the rule, right? So you just got to know what you're doing, right? It's as simple as that. And no, glad you got that experience. Glad that we've got DP World Tour Golf back for 2 weeks. And then we lose it again.
I feel bad for the player. I think the more and more, I just feel really bad for the fringe guys in these scenarios, man. Like I saw Sam Jones post during the break. He won I'm forgetting the tour. I think we talked about it last fall, but there's a professional tour in New Zealand that guys can play on and come back, like a mini tour. And he won an event there. And I guess a little fault of his own, he didn't have his visa ready in time to get into this week. Said he's very far down the alternate list for China. So he's probably not going to be able to play until the middle of next month. So we're looking at a good 6-8 weeks. Galetti, somebody we've been banging the drum on. Like, and then when you get your spots, it's coming off cold, like from these things. Like,
I think that's the thing, right? You've hit the nail on the head. A lot of the things are in the players' controls in the sense of if you haven't played well the previous year, if you haven't played well in the months leading into events, then it's kind of on you, right? If you haven't booked your visa, sorted your visa out, that's on you. But for the players that have been, you know, you think about someone like Connor Syme, who had gone like 7th, 4th, and 8th and then hasn't played for 6 weeks. And then you've got someone like Sebastian Soderberg's been playing well for forever, right? And he just gets weeks and weeks where he can't play golf. And then we come to Japan, where this is a really big opportunity for the Japanese players to, you know, get some DP World Tour status. And, you know, that can lead to the PGA Tour and all sorts, right? They've played one tournament on the Japan Tour in 2024. So it needs some work. It really does need some work. The schedule needs some work. I think there are some huge benefits and what they've put in. I mean, the PGA Tour thing is great for the individuals, and it does, I think, make some compelling, you know, action for people joining DP World Tour. I think, you know, Ben made a really good point about this, Ben Coley on, you know, on Twitter, that was sort of saying, you know, yes, Nakajima is talking about going to the PGA Tour already, but Nakajima would not be coming over to play on the DP World Tour for a season if it wasn't his, you know, his access to the PGA Tour, right? So it works in both ways. The schedule just needs sorting out. They just need more tournaments or, you know, fewer gaps. It really is that simple. I mean, there was meant to be Korea the week after Augusta, and they moved that because of a title sponsor and things like that. So, look, it's an imperfect world, but we deal with it, and we take a stab at this week, which happens to be a brand new golf course to us all as well. Or not brand new, but certainly new to the DP World Tour.
Yeah, and we've been running pretty good too. You know, we're going to have a little, you know, coming off of a cold stretch of not being able to play or bet on any DP World Tour golf. It's been our best year since doing the podcast, pretty much, with multiple winners, huge places left and right. We've definitely, the last one, right, Indian Open, Veer Alawat, hit the board at 300-1, I think he was, finishing inside the top five for that big each way payout. He did win on the Indian Tour, I think the next week or 2 weeks later. Actually, he won, and then the week prior, Chimad, who I also had bet, won on the PGA Tour of India too. So both those guys followed up with W's. So, but no, I think the Challenge Tour did play last week, so some guys did get a little bit. I actually saw our guy James Nicholas is playing in the Zurich Classic this week. He's racking up these sponsors exemptions.
Who's
so
he playing with?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. I immediately forgot. I know. I was about to search it as we looked. James Nicholas. He is with... He's going to have the stars. He's with...
Is it Brandon Wu or Dylan Wu, one of the two? He's with one of the Wus. And I can't say.
Why don't the Wus should play together?
Yeah, I'm guessing.
He's not with Dylan. He must be with Brandon.
Oh, is it Dylan Wu with Justin Lau then?
Yes.
So it's Brandon Wu with James Nicholas then.
I just have
Wu Nicholas in front of me, so that's what I'm working with.
Yes.
That's an interesting group, right?
I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. And then Pat Guider is with Thurston. And then we have the Højgaards too. We have some
this is the one I really like, the Pat Guider to Thurston one, because what do we know about Thurston? Like, if anything, probably needs a little bit more distance, right? And Pat Guider's got it in abundance. So it could be a really good team.
Yeah, I mean, what, he won second event he played on the DP or the KFT, right? I mean,
he's up there on the standings, right, for the KFT this year.
He is fourth so far. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he made the cut down here. Yeah. So I think, but I mean, it all bodes up to a hard betting week. I think actually our card aligns with how I would approach this week. I mean, favorites are just as rusty as anybody. I guess. Outside of the two that are coming over, Bez and Pavan are the market leaders, you know, Bezenhout and Matthew Pavan playing this week. Did you have any keen interest on those two? Because for us, we start way down there. But
yeah, I was surprised that Pavan wasn't favorite. I thought Pavan would be favorite over Bezenhout, and I thought there'd be a bigger gap, actually. I think Pavan, if people like betting on favorites, I think Pavon's actually pretty good value. I'm surprised that he's the number he is. I think Lucas Herbert had just finished way down leaderboard at the Heritage before he won here. or not this course, but this tournament last year. And Pavana's, you know, been brilliant all season long. So I definitely see Pavana. I mean, we saw him, didn't we? He came back to the Singapore Classic, I think it was, Sky, on the last sort of deep blood source. And he, you know, started slowly, but then finished fifth. And when I say started slowly, he was 21st after round one. So that's slow for Matthew Pavon at the moment. And then since then, he's been, you know, 12th in the Masters. So I'm really surprised that he's not. I've been really impressed with Bazaid now. I've spoken a lot this season about how I've kind of completely changed my mind about him and think he's actually almost undervalued in the market now. But he comes right back into this as favourite, and that surprised me a bit. And then Jordan Smith makes sense. When I was looking at kind of a little bit of research and to see what people had said about the golf course, Steve Rawlings on Betfair brought up a really good point of, you know, just looking at, so they did play this golf course on the DP World Tour way back when, or Clark or Westwood have both gone over to Japan, one of the two, and they'd won the tournament and they'd also won at K Club. So I looked at kind of the people that played well in this event last year at a different golf course and played well at K Club, and Jordan Smith was named was one of those that came up. But I think that's a bit loose for someone that's 20-1. So then you've got the two Japanese guys in Keita Nakajima, who's obviously won his first DP World Tour event, and Takumi Kanai, who's coming in off of a win in the first Japan Tour start of the year and has won on this golf course. So the two leading Japanese players obviously have huge merit.
Yeah, I guess the ones, like, for me that I was a little shocked, I guess what has Jordan Smith really done to be the clear, like, separator on the DP World Tour? Like, I just cannot bet him at this number, but I mean, maybe even McKibben, like, I still don't think he's a separate, like, to me, the one guy who's maybe just been, like, absolutely, two guys that have been dialed who Sundays are just not their friends are Sebastian Soderberg and Connor Stein. Like those would be, if you ask me, like, who are the most informed DP World Tour players, those would probably be my two answers outside of, I mean, Nakajima in that sense, maybe, maybe even not outside the win, but like, I was surprised at those two odds relative to who got pushed up. I mean, we're still asking questions about Byrne. Ewan maybe makes some sense at this course here. Like I could see him, but Mansell being priced lower than some of them. Rosner, you know, like I said, McKibben, like Yannick Paul, like it we're betting off of form from not as relevant as some of the other guys have in theory. I don't know if there's enough pedigree. I guess I'm happy that we're not starting the board for a long ways.
I guess Connor Syme is probably the one, right? Like the bank of form in terms of this kind of range of 45-1 and that price where, as you said, Soderberg and Syme are the informed players. And I probably, with, you know, 12 extra points or whatever, probably just give Syme the nod as they both kind of struggle to get the win. I was tempted by Kanai, I'm not going to lie. A player that we were really high on for a long time, Sky, you know, when he was kind of 60-1, 80-1, 100-1, he was coming over here a little bit like what Nakajima was at the start of this season. But he's not been missed right in the market. So it used to be that Romain Langasque never moved in the market, and he's now 60-1. I think it's Jordan Smith who's just sitting in that random spot where you kind of want to bet him because everything suggests that he will play well, but you don't want to bet him at 20-1. So I think we've been really fortunate, Sky, in the sense that we've got two really strong players coming over from the PGA Tour, giving us a bit of value, and then the DP World Tour regulars. Which is ridiculous because even if they are playing regularly on the DP World Tour, the DP World Tour isn't playing regularly. To your point, like, are just kind of bolstering the odds. So I think that's why we're living so much down the board.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really, and maybe I'm making an assumption about the profiles of which the golfers have come out who play in Japan the most, right? A lot of these courses aren't ones, or a lot of the players aren't guys that are super long. Like, it's more precision golf, good with the irons, good on the greens. I mean, Herbert winning is a little bit, I don't want to say an anomaly, but I mean, he's wildly inaccurate off of the tee, but as good of a short game as it comes. Cockerill last year too, you know, with him, really dynamite short game. So I'm not necessarily, into, like, you know, a Svensson who we loved earlier, Del Rey, who, you know, we've played a bunch of courses in the DP World Tour that have favored those type of guys. This is the one that probably doesn't play into their hands as much. And I guess history tells of the Japan Golf Tour who guys who have won here. But I think it just gives us more and more reason to keep going down the board.
I agree. I think the nail on the head and the real summary is Japanese golf courses tend to be fairly similar. Tree line, reward good iron play. If you do miss a green, you've got challenging up and downs, and you know you need to keep the putt, you know, going well. I think that's going to be the same case. There has been reports of like quite a bit of rain coming on Wednesday potentially, and it might soften the golf course. So maybe length favors you for the first round or so. But look, I think the players that we've picked are not exactly like the shortest guys, right? So I'm not too worried about that. I think if I was picking someone that was short just for the sake of picking a short hitter, I'd be worried. But I just don't think we need to go for those bombers like the Norgard Mollers and the Svenssons, as you mentioned. So it does open up what we can do. And I guess without further ado, we'll start getting into the picks.
Yeah. I mean, the first one is like so blatantly obvious to both of us that stood out that we had to bet it. And that was Sam Bairstow, right? The golfer who has been pretty much top three graduate of the Challenge Tour guys this year, right?
I mean, so we're saying Svensson's better and Cassar.
I mean, LaCroix started hot. Like that's like the only other one that I would really probably say, right?
I guess Hugo's been pretty consistent, but like apart from that one challenging week, it's been middling finishes, right? So yeah, top three or four, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, Bairstow probably should have or could have beat Svensson, right, when you were on him at a big number. I mean, six top 25s, three other made cuts. You know, he's what? So it's 9 for 12 and made cuts this year. Driving the ball incredibly well. I mean, I think he's got some stellar short game too. At 70s, I think 70s with the each way, 90s if you prefer to just bet the top five separate, just feels like a home run.
Yeah, like I'm surprised that 70 is available in the first place. So the fact that you can add 20 points by taking a chance in winning is huge. And I think I would definitely do that as well. I would split stakes. The 70 to 1 each way is really appealing when you think about the fact that, you know, as you said, he had a couple of missed cuts there. Kenya and the SDC. Now, I'd love to have seen him play well in Kenya. I think that would have been really good considering the type of golf course we're getting this year. But, you know, 23rd at the Raz, 23rd at Bahrain, where he's fourth going into the final round, 13th at the Qatar Masters, where he's sixth after two rounds, seventh after three rounds. And then, you know, the last three events, since, you know, when I think the real test, Sky, was seeing how he responded to those back-to-back miscuts, and the answer was brilliantly right. The Johnson Work, where finished 15th, he had three rounds of 67 or better, finishes third at the Singapore Classic, as you mentioned, could have easily won that. You know, and then 13th place at the Indian Open, where he's seventh going into the final round, fourth after round one. It seems so strange to me. Like, I don't know what he needs to do to prove that he's a contender. I mean, a player with form like this, I mean, you look at someone like, if someone like a, let's just pick a name that I'm seeing right now, like if Marcus Armitage was playing like this, it'd probably be 40 to 1, right? And
oh yeah,
do we think there's a big gap between the two of the golfers? Like, not at all. So, yeah, I'm really high on Sam Bairstow, so as you are now as well. Brad was always really high on him. I think he's spoken about him a couple of times on the show with us. So, all in on Sam Bairstow until we have reason not to. And if that means he shoots 77 over the first two rounds here, then so be it. But at the number, I'm always going to take a chance.
Yeah. And I think we've done good just riding players like we have, and I think it just makes sense. And the next one up, I mean, we have a super aligned card overall this week. And you, I think, did a shove. No, maybe a gentle push, I would say. Because I was in my early notes in on this golfer, at least on being on the radar. But at, you know, 90s with a sixth place each way for a golfer where we're going to have to see a different style in some ways. Maybe the course plays into that favor. But Hao Tong Li has been all over, like, popping, like, around here, a couple rounds here. like the best we've seen from a consistent manner out of him since basically, you know, probably 2020. So why is this the spot that Hao Tong can do it?
So the hope is that it's because he can leave his driver in the bag, because that is obviously what is, he can get quite reckless with that. But interestingly, it's been his around the green game that's really cost him, right? Like his chipping has been terrible when he's been in the situation, but it's because, and I think this happens, you know, the strokes gain arguments guy, is like, if you're so good with your irons, you miss only a couple of times from the greens, and then you don't get up and down, you get severely punished, right? So it's, there's always kind of, you know, things you need to look at with these statistics. But 14th in the Dubai Invitational, 7th at the Dubai Desert Classic, where he's a round one leader and definitely had a chance of contending throughout that week. Didn't play well at the Raz when we were on him, but then a week off, 16th at the Qatar Masters. And then you look at the last couple of, you know, last two or three starts, you think, oh, on paper, it looks pretty disappointing. 60th in the International Series in Macau, you know, back in Asia, and leads after round one, shoots a 63 and then finishes 60th. Like, obviously disappointing. 43rd at the Singapore Classic, but again, 9th after round one, 13th after round three. And then last week in the Saudi, 17th, where he was second after two rounds, third after three rounds. It goes to your point of like, he's flashing in these two or three rounds each week. We just need a player that we know is more than capable of winning, putting an extra round together. That's literally what we're betting on. Last five registered starts show it's going 10th, 5th, 37th, 11th and 10th. In approach, he's the second best iron player in that time. So a lot to like about Hao Tong. And what I kind of pointed out to you last year, he basically missed every cut last year, but he finished 31st in this event. And albeit it's a different golf course, I think just returning closer to home is going to suit him.
Yeah, I think his iron play has been spectacular. The rounds are leading to it. And the number's still there. Like, I think when we bet him at the Raz, it was 50s, right? You know, we still were willing to, so we're getting double the number. The form hasn't left all that much. Last week, on the Asian tour, an event that John Catlin, I guess we, off the top, we forgot Scotty, Nelly, Catlin, yeah, the big three right now in the game of golf. John Catlin probably has about as polar opposite game of Hao Tong Lee that exists out there. Right. So if Hao Tong is able to compete at a course in which Catlin is dominating at, it feels in which that is a good recipe to carry over this success into this week.
I agree. Yeah, 100%. But I think look, it's just a big number. It's just another big number on a golfer that ultimately is better than this level. Like it based on years of experience, this guy's, you know, contended in a major for a couple of rounds. He's, you know, beaten Rory McIlroy. Like, he is a DP World Tour winner. We've seen people at Afabarmrat get, you know, bet over recent weeks because of their profile and Hao Tong fits in that bill, and he's still 100 to 1.
Yes.
Or 90 to 1.
Yep. I can agree with you there. So again, we are very aligned. So I'm going to let you, knowing your love, I would say, for this golfer, arguably being your favorite golfer in the world, if you want to key in our next selection.
Yeah, so Matteo Manassero, like, I don't get what he has to do to shorten his odds. Like, he's still 90 to 1. And all right, the guy struggled, you know, earlier in the season, right? Like, he missed three of his first four cuts. But since then, 36th for the SDC Championship, he was 8th after round one. Follows up for win the following week, where he shoots 61 in round two and then just keeps going. Misses the cut in his next start in Singapore and then finishes 5th at the Indian Open, where he's, you know, leader after round one, inside the top five all week. When I think about Manassero, I just think about him as a kind of tidy player that, you know, isn't going to bamboozle you with distance, isn't going to, you know, look like the absolute best at maybe anything really, right? But he's just so consistent, so tidy when he's at his best. And when you look at his approach play, I mean, outside of the missed cuts, 16th, 3rd, 4th and 20th in strokes gained approach in those last four starts of those, it's ridiculous that we're getting a number like that on a player that we know can win. He'd spent a career winning year after year. I think he won 4 years in a row as he came out and turned pro, right? So I guess the one question mark is he going to do it in this part of the world? I think he's only played in Japan or, you know, once, and there wasn't much to it, but not a lot of these guys. When you look back, I always think that Japan hosted more events than it did, but it, he really didn't on the DP World Tour. It's just guys is just going over to play the Japan Tour, and he didn't do it in his early part of his career, right? So I think he's just back, Sky. I think he's back, and I think that the reason people don't fully believe it is because the game's evolved slightly. So him being back is not him being a top five player on DP World Tour, because I don't think his skill set allows him to do that. The reason he disappeared for so long is he was trying to get more distance, can't do it successfully. He's now humbled himself, reined himself back in, and then just playing to his strengths, and that's why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, I would agree. I think also when talking about the courses of which that we've played so far this year, there really aren't that many that have been his cup of tea, and two of them that fit that are the one he won at, and the other one being last time out at the Hero Indian Open at DLF. It's still a precision test, and you like chaos is everywhere, you know, even though it's gimmicky in some spots, like that type of golf compared to his missed cuts at the Ross, at the Byron, at Qatar, you know, like Dubai. Like I'm not too concerned overall about, similar to how we went back to Van Driel in a spot that made course fit sense. You know, I think when you ask those questions and now we're showing up here, it seems like a slam dunk at 90s for me. So he's also, I mean, at this point of the year, he's 12th in the race to Dubai. Like he is chomping at the bit for a PGA Tour card. You know, if you keep, I know we're probably at the halfway point, maybe not even that far yet, but he's got a shot.
Yeah. I mean, look, because first of all, I mean, what is it going to be, five or six in the top? Don't need the card, right? That's going to be the first thing. You're going to see Rory, Fleetwood, Aberg, etc. in there. Morant's going to fall down now. He's gone to live, right? So it's, yeah, like, he's in for one now is the main thing. I think that the concern with him is that he's not consistent, and we've just covered why. Like, I don't think he suits every single type of golf course. Even when he won twice on the Challenge Tour last year to kind of get his card, he was still, you know, struggling. He was missing cuts and things like that. But I just think he's just a fairly one-dimensional player in the sense that he just needs a course where you don't need to drive it a billion miles and you just get rewarded for being consistent and tidy, and that's what we're expecting this week. And if we're wrong on that, we're wrong on that, because we don't know a ton about the golf course. But looking at the type of players that have won here from the DP World Tour in the past, Lee Westwood, Darrell Clark, it strikes me as something that Mateo Manasero can follow through with.
Yes, absolutely agree. I'm quite excited for next selection on my end, because it's been a little bit of a throwback to, I guess, early DP World Tour, even early cards, that, like, again, the infatuation of learning about other tours and then betting these guys when they get their opportunities on the big time tours. Like, one of the first people that hit that benchmark to me was Shugo, you know, like Shugo popping over to the Sony Open. I was like, man, this is it. This guy wins two times a year in Japan. You know, he's going to come over and really kind of take those events by storm. And I believe there was one Sony, he made a little bit of a weekend run. That was on, yeah, T33 back in 2019, where he opened 65, 67, and he was top 10 going into the weekend. And I was like, all right, like, these are the opportunities. And I mean, that year he top 10'd everything. I think he had like eight or nine top fives that year. Like, that was King Shugo, period. And I would say overall, it hasn't gone the same way. I mean, still picked up two wins in 23, two wins in 22, and just been a Japan Tour regular. It's kind of the way his career has shaken out. A couple majors in the last 5 years, a couple made cuts, but he basically top 20s everything, and a couple wins each year, one including in 2023 at this very course. You know, if we look at guys that are familiar, it just wasn't that long ago that the Kanaya Nakajima types, the Taiga Semikawas, like Shugo was the one they were getting to. And maybe he's more Kazuki Higa than those guys in that manner, right? Those guys were AMs coming out and kind of taking it by storm then. But Shugo has had a really strong run of form if you look back into 2023 as well. You know, ninth prior before. He did withdraw an event prior to the Dunlap Phoenix which I wasn't that concerned with his performance there, missed cut by a mile. If you look back through the year, I mean, he's still five top fives, three more top tens, and a ton of ball striking that went with the greens in regulation, among the best on the tour, 23rd in his early event, 10th in greens in regulation. I just think somebody who has that overall pedigree in his bag, showing up at this number in this type of field at a course he's done so well at, I will be dipping into Shugo. Let's see, what's the best number at the moment? 100 for Shugo.
Yeah, like it's funny, isn't it? Because he was the only one, I think, that finished inside the top 11 last year in this tournament, right? So for all the Kanayas and Nakajimas, everyone was expected to do so well, he was the one that kind of put himself into the mix. And that kind of speaks to the level of player. And the one knock on him that you would say in his career so far is that he hasn't gone over and done that in tournaments in the past. Like, he hasn't gone and impressed in other ways. Was it Shugo that had done that? Was it?
That it didn't.
That
played so well?
Yeah, in this. No, it wasn't. It was Iwata that finished so well here last year. So we can forget that comment.
It wasn't Shugo. No.
But I think for me, one of the things you have to sort of focus on with these Japanese players is that, one, have they played recently? Yes, he has. He played in the last tournament. Two, have they shown an ability, or have they played in bigger fields? You talked about the Sony Open. He's played in majors. He got an invite to the Masters when he missed just outside the top 50 in 2019. They've had the kind of feel of bigger levels. And then this is, I think the gap is just so much narrower, Sky, in terms of what to expect in these tournaments, right? That you just, it doesn't seem like such a daunting task now for him to turn up and do so well. So for someone that's, you know, one of the, is he the most recent winner at this golf course? I think he is. So you've got that. He's got a couple of eighth place finishes, a 12th as well. Obviously very consistent in this tournament. So why not a triple digits?
Yeah, it just felt good going back to the well, especially with the ball striking in that manner that we're seeing. It's good to even see greens in regulation on there. I mean, strokes gained, we've struggled with at times, you know, on the DP World Tour. It was good to see the Korn Ferry Tour pick up shot tracker. Let's just get it better around the world. But so Shugo for me there. You've got a selection. First time we're differentiating here with Shugo for me. And then who's your 100-1 pick?
Yeah, so I'm going with Grant Forrest. And this could be a bit rogue, Sky. This is tying into that really loose correlation I spoke to you about that Steve Rawlings flagged. So sort of looked at the fact that Westwood and Clark are one at this golf course and one at the K Club in Ireland. And when you look at it, Forrest finished fourth in this event last year, obviously a different golf course, but he finished third at the K Club in the Irish Open. And he also finished fourth behind Lucas Herbert in the Irish Open in 2021 as well. And I think based on the fact that we're under the assumption or of the opinion that Japanese golf courses are fairly similar, you know, between them, right? If that is certainly the case, then I think that we have to look at where did Lucas Herbert's win come from. And when you look at it, Grant Forrest seems to pop up in you know, different leaderboards with him. So it's a little bit of a shot in the dark. He's not playing very well. He did get married at the start of the year. And I just wonder if, like, there's a little bit of, or right at the end of 2023, and I wonder if that's a little bit of a, you know, just distraction or just take your eye off the ball. Probably not great, as you said, with the stop-start. Maybe just hasn't got into the season. This looks like a good golf course for him based on what he's done in his career so far. So although I haven't got the biggest amount of faith in someone that's not playing the best golf, I think if we were looking at Grant Forrest at 100-1 in, you know, recent seasons, we'd be pretty impressed. And he has been 23rd at the Bahrain Championship, so it's not been all terrible. Made the cut at the Singapore Classic before sort of falling away. You look at the fact he was second in China on the Challenge Tour, so I like that as well. Yeah, he's been second a couple of times actually in China in that Hinoan Open. So I think I just like what he's done. He obviously likes these type of golf courses. He obviously likes what Lucas Herbert likes, and Lucas Herbert won in this event last year. So it's a little bit of a shot in the dark, but 100-1, I'm gonna go with it.
Yeah, I mean, 11th at the Genesis Scottish Open tells you the upside that he had. You know, like, his 2023 was strong, you know, and I think we've been kind of hoping for that from Forrest for a good amount of time. So hopefully over what he did withdraw in that last event, hopefully nothing, you know, really, I mean, we've had 6 weeks or 4 weeks since then. So plenty of time to tee it back up. We're back on the same page here, 150-1, just reopened in some books here for Sean Norris. He was somebody that watching the last couple events, just had a keen eye for, you know, I mean, overall, if we look, you know, Norris was second to Montessaro at the Johnson Workwear, another course that a little bit tidier golf played better in that manner. And the leaderboard was kind of littered with type of golfers who would play well also at the track that we're projecting here. And then 24th at the SDC, from him there, he'd opened with a 65. If it wasn't for the 78 on Saturday, they would have been a heck of a lot better. But Norris also comes in with a wealth of knowledge, course experience, playing the Japanese golf tour, you know, somebody from South Africa who has that type of history, I think makes so much sense when we get him pretty much kind of starting to tick these boxes of form, and then at a massive number like this. And another one who, you know, like Shugo, like, winning isn't something that he is, you know, afraid of doing. I mean, he's picked up what, probably, I think 10 career wins at this point. Last one for him back in 2022, but he had two in 21 as well. So I'm a big fan of Sean Norris at these numbers. Normally this type of golfer, when we get like a Sunshine Tour co-collaboration event, is like 30s. So yeah. 150s, you know, probably triple the odds of what you might get in some of those other spots. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's purely because you just look at it. Sean Norris on the DP World Tour doesn't win very often. He's done it once, right? But he beat Dean Burmester by 3 shots. He was really impressive that week. But Sean Norris on the Japan Tour, 6 wins. Like, between 2016 and 2021, that's 6 wins in 5 years. It's pretty impressive. He had a playoff loss in there as well. He never beat the biggest names on the Japan Tour. So I wonder if he kind of won the slightly second tier Japan Tour events, right, would be my one concern. But again, one when he should have done really on the Sunshine Tour, and he's had other different things like that. And it's just that it's that run of form that you mentioned, Sky. Like, he's showing up now at the very best time. Like, he was sixth in the Cape Town Open, second, as you said, behind Manassero, who played really well there all week, never outside the top six. 24th, the STC, first off the round one, second off the round two. And it's the extensive course knowledge that he has. He's not just played it once, it's the 6 starts. He was 65th on debut, and he's finished 6th, 3rd, 2nd, 15th. And then even when he was 37th last year, and people might point to that and just say, look, this is probably more of like what Sean Norris is now, he was 9th after 2 rounds as well. So, and he shot the second round 65. So he's still ready to compete on this type of golf course. It's probably the only type of golf course he's probably going to compete on from now on, but that's why you ride with him in these 1 week events.
Yep, absolutely. Both of us have one more long shot. Before we get there, I want to make sure we give a shout out to our audio listeners. You can find us at Daily Fantasy Sports Picks and Bets, The Mix, available on all different podcast platforms, Mayo Media Network. Absolutely love the support that we get. You can find me at Skyhook DFS, Tom at TomJacobs93. In the downtime that we've had in the last couple of weeks, I have ventured back into kind of the PGA Daily Fantasy streets of providing some content. So if you are interested in that, you can find me over at Establish the Run using their golf product or providing value over there. Tom's always busting it with his Lost for Words podcast and, you know, over on Odds Checker as well. So a lot where you can find us, but mainly just, if you hang out on Twitter, you're going to see our names interacting around our favorite tours. And surprisingly enough, I have to go first next because Tom's pick is longer than mine. So I'm proud of him. Very, very proud of him. I am landing at 400-1 Yuta Suguria. Suguria, I think is probably the best way to pronounce there. So Yuta, let me get everything pulled up for him. So he is coming in off of, man, I just had it all ready for us, Tom. So he is coming in off 8th to kick off the first Japan Golf Tour event of the year. And for him, what really stood out, he's just 22 years old. So when you looked at 8th in that event, Macau, so the Asian Tour event, I thought there was some good liking to have in there. So at an event that's probably got a decent bit more pedigree, I think a good amount of live guys were in that event too. Second after the first 18 holes, fifth the halfway point, goes 64, 67, 67, 67 in that event. At the New Zealand Open, so he's popping over through three different tours. He was seventh at the halfway point on the Australasian Tour there. So three, I would say, pretty dang good starts in the month of March for him. Three wins overall in 2023, one of them as an amateur, the other one coming at the Dunlap Phoenix tournament, knowing that's the event where they're able to get the PGA guys, they're able to get the LIV guys. I think the Gala, Brooks were in there, Wyndham Clark. No one really showed out this year compared to other years, but I mean, to win that event, that's a very high caliber win. He also won, I think it was on the Abama Tour, so the development tour last year there. And then prior to that, it pretty much was a mix between getting pro starts as an AM that went decently and picking off amateur tour wins or top five finishes. You put that together at 22 years old versus some of the other guys that I saw with either history or playing well or ball striking. I think the combination of not knowing that much at 22 years old, I think we have just a ton of opportunity to learn about him here. So at 400s, I'm willing to take that bet on Suguria.
Yeah, he's the one I think that like profiles as he's the one we don't know about compared to Nakajima, right? Like it's that type of thing. It's the Ishikawa, it's that type of player that's coming out, winning tournaments as an amateur, high pedigree, playing well, as you said, playing well in different types of fields. I think that's really important, like going over to the Asian Tour, playing the International Series events. I think it's really key. So I do really like that. I think it makes a lot of sense. I quickly bet it, actually, just before we came on here, just because he was still kind of 300 to 1 over here. And that's definitely going to go quite quickly. So, yeah, definitely on board with it. I like it.
Awesome. You close us out here with your final selection, Tom.
Yeah, look, I'm going to be completely honest. Like, if you didn't come 4 minutes later than originally planned, and that's not me having a dig, if you didn't come 4 minutes later than originally planned, Sky, I wouldn't have bet this golfer. I just had a little bit longer on my hands. And I found Takahiro Hitaji, who until that 4 minutes, I didn't really know anything about. So this is, you know, spoiler alert, 4 minutes worth of research for Hitaji. But he won the New Zealand Open that we've kind of referenced a couple of times in recent weeks. He was 23rd in the Token Homemade Cup, which is the one event that we've seen so far this season on the Japan Tour. He had two rounds of 66 that week and a final round of 69. He was 7th after round 1, 18th after round 3. And Sky, he's played here 4 times. He's finished 33rd on debut, 4th on his second start, where he was the 18 and 36-hole leader, 2nd going into the final round. And then last year, he finished 16th, where he was the first-round leader and 2nd after 36 holes as well, and then shot a 76 on Saturday. Now, not one on the Japan Tour. And I don't think he's, you know, a spring chicken. I think he is kind of like 30 years old. So that is why he's 750-1, because he's got to 30 playing in Japan and not won. But I just think, as you know, if you can find a big price with the each way, I mean, he's like 500-1 with 7 places in England. Just looks a bit of a better player than that, I think. And you go back, you talk about that Dunlop Phoenix event. He was 4th. You know, this is a guy that literally finished 2 shots behind Nakajima and Semikawa. Obviously, importantly for you, 5 shots behind Segura, right? But again, good tournament. Hideki Matsuyama, 10th in it. Brooks Koepka, 15th in it. Sean Norris, we mentioned, 17th in it. Like, all these players we kind of reference and know about in big events, like, it's huge. So for me, even in Japan Open Golf Championship, he was tied 3rd. I think he's just a really, really big price for someone that's shown up in some decent events without actually winning.
Yeah, I think you said, you know, last year, what it was, Iwasaki that finished 4th. I mean, you look at Iwasaki, he's a little bit old, I guess 26 years old. Was he the one that, no, who finished 4th last year? It was, we had this up.
Ikawa? Had it up in front of me, and then
I'm going to have it here. It was Iwata.
Yeah.
But when I said that, Iwata is a 43-year-old who's, you know, been plodding around on these tours for a good amount of time, and the familiarity of the track, familiarity of it, like, it does. Like, I went the other route, betting the 22-year-old for it, but I think there's course experience, and I mean, that paid off pretty close in India for some guys too. So I'm willing to actually, I'm just proud of you, Tom, to see that coming in the card.
It's almost, do you remember the Zozo? And I think we put up Horikawa for first round leader.
Yes.
It feels like that. It's probably, let's go and get him on first round leader, and hopefully he goes out and fires a low one and maybe he drifts away over the weekend. But 750 is one, I'll take a chance.
Yes, 100%. All right. We'll close out. Tom, if you want to read through your card one more time for me.
Yes. So I am joining you, Sam Bairstow, 90-1 best price. Mateo Manassero, 90-1 as well. I think Howson, has he come into 90-1 or is he still 100-1?
Let's see. There's 90s. 90s is the 90, best. With six places, though, here.
With the six places. Grant Forrest at 100-1. Sean Norris, 130 still, or has he come in now as well?
Let's see. Yeah, everything's been repriced. Norris. It got changed quite a bit here. So I think we quoted 130 sounds right.
Okay, good. And then the 750-1 that I just mentioned with Takahiro Hitachi.
Yep. Perfect. Okay. So that Norris number changed a lot. I mean, I still like it at the 90s. Looks like the best price. If you got in pre-show, I would still be on at 90 personally.
Yeah, I would. Yeah.
For Norris. So Bairstow 70. For me, Haotong 90s. Mateo looks like he's getting bet down a little bit. There might be 80 might be the best number. Still okay with Mateo 80, 90. Shugo at 100. There. Yeah, we get down to 80s if that's the best available too as we close out. And Norris, like I said, 90. If you still have the 130s, even up to 150s, I was out there. I'm in on Sean Norris. And then Yuta Segura at 400-1 was the final selection for me there. So perfect. All right, Tom, we will close out on that. We'll catch you guys again next week. We have one more week before another break of the DP World Tour. But appreciate everything you guys have. And then we will catch you next week. Thanks again.
Good luck, everyone.